Hello, everybody. Jan Rutherford here with Self-Reliant Leadership. Hope you're doing great today. And as you know, we've got three amazing guests on who I'll bring on in a minute here from three amazing companies. But first, what we wanted to do to kick off the Crucible Tips for Transitioning Military Veterans is we wanted to show a little bit of a video, some highlights from our latest trip in Moab, Utah. Out in the Slot Canyons of Utah back in May, just recently. So enjoy this 4 minute clip, and then we'll be back to introduce our special guests. And again, please send in your questions. We'll be monitoring those and answering as we can. Thanks. Good morning,
everybody.
Good morning.
I told you, snap for fingers, it'd be Sunday morning.
Let's embrace the suck.
Find a place for your feet.
So we need to be actually going this way.
What did you take away from the discussion that might apply to your situation?
I remember when I was trying to do something, Katie kept saying, footing, footing, footing. In the business world is to make sure we're on good footing and everybody's on board before we move.
Basically, we want to complete all the obstacles and just enjoy the outdoors, but also to meet, you know, a lot of great people and get different perspectives on leadership.
You can go further and have more fun and have better capability without the baggage.
Make the things that are the most important the priority.
We all had different strengths. It really showed up the more difficult the obstacles became.
I would not be able to do this, to be honest with you. I would not be able to do this without just really wonderful people.
What I got out of it was learning about other opportunities in the business community.
This confirmed that diversity is strength.
Everything that goes on and takes place in a field environment can be applied to the business world.
Leadership at its core is the same regardless of where you come from.
Spending actual real quality time with good human beings where you're not just looking at your phone every 10 seconds.
My takeaway point was like, I'm not the only one.
Only diamonds can shake diamonds. Amazing people make amazing teams that produce outstanding results.
This just reminds me that, well, you set the stage, you create the environment, you set the expectations, really great things happen. So that was us just a month ago, and it was half executives and half military veterans. And let me go around the horn and have you guys introduce yourselves. And I'll basically go Matt, Alberto, Antonio. So if you could just introduce yourself of what you did in the military and what you're doing today.
Thanks, Jan. Hey, folks. Like Jan said, Matt, I was in the Navy with the Seabees doing civil and combat construction, currently still serving in the U.S. Navy Reserve, which is why I have the mustache within regulations. I'm now working at Google, and I do university entry-level recruiting for engineering and customer support positions.
Excellent. Excellent. Alberto?
Yeah, first off, thanks so much for having us, Jan. This is a Navy and Marine Corps team with the exception of you. So also was in the Navy as a submarine officer, left active duty a couple of years ago, continuing to serve in the reserves also just like Matt. Spent some time in foreign policy, and now I work for an organization called New Politics, supporting veterans and National Service alumni we're interested in politics, whether that's running for office, seeking appointed office, or just being more engaged citizens on campaigns.
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks, Alberto. And Antonio, the Marine.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Jan, for having me. So my name is Antonio. I'm a veteran of 22 years in the United States Marine Corps, where I served as an infantryman for most of the time in my career. Aside from some, auxiliary billets, I should call it. Once I retired in 2019, I joined Baker Hughes on a military leadership program where I have the opportunity to serve in different functions and different roles and rotate around the business as I develop. So it's been a great opportunity.
Yeah. And Antonio, I'm wondering what you miss the most about your days in the Marine Corps.
You know, what I miss the most are the people. The tribe that, you know, the camaraderie that comes with that, the mentality that comes with the tribe, it's really second to none, and it's really hard to duplicate.
Yeah. Yeah. Matt and Alberto, you find the same thing? Alberto, maybe especially you as a submariner.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. That was the first thing that popped into my head too, is the people in the camaraderie, small unit leadership, and a lot of those things translate, but I really miss the people that I was with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus one to that, you know, I think that, you know, oftentimes in the active duty setting, you know, it almost feels like there's a collective goal. You know, I always tell people in that mindset, we're all warriors together. We're all on the same mission together. It's just a little bit different being in the reserves and being in the civilian world.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you miss most about those military days? Is it the camaraderie and what surprised you the most about the business world? Any surprises?
I can take that. You know, I think biggest surprises, you know, oftentimes, Jan, as you probably know, the business world is all about, there's a lot of competing priorities, right? That's how a business operates.
Yeah.
Military tends to be very, as we all know, order driven, right? Especially as an enlisted or an NCO, it is different. You know, at a place like Google, you know, very often we want to hear our mid-level managers, you know, giving feedback, and even our lowest level employees giving constant feedback up the chain.
Right.
So that is certainly an adjustment to have managers asking you for feedback.
Yeah. You know, I think for me, the thing that I've been, you know, I work with veterans who are transitioning every day, and what they're transitioning to is to politics. But I think within the organization itself, the thing that's been most surprising to me is how many similarities there are to the military. And I think it's easy in the military it's absolutely true to think about the fact that people can die if I mess up, or, you know, there's this very direct connection to consequences. But in the business world, I think people are thinking about that too. They're thinking about livelihood of their employees, and take that responsibility very seriously. And so I've been very surprised and impressed actually with how similar the two experiences are, even though they're obviously vastly different professional groups.
Yeah. And Antonio, you with the most years in service, What about you? What surprised you about the business world?
You know, I think the biggest surprise I had is the care that people have for the culture of the company and the culture of, you know, just the culture in general. You know, in the military, we obviously care about our people tremendously and it's, you know, and it goes deep. I didn't expect to get that coming into the civilian sector, but I find that as at least the company that I'm with, I find that that the company really cares about the culture and tries to do its best to provide a good environment all around for the individual employee.
Yeah. Hey, we've got a question coming in from Ralph Trotta. We say manager a lot in corporate America. How would you build a team of leaders versus managers? And is there a value in a corporate environment to really focus on that? Anyone want to take that one?
Yeah, I'll hop on with kind of my gut reaction. I think that it is important to distinguish between management versus leadership. And in my mind, the difference is whether or not you're leading people or managing projects. And I think the moment that you take the people out of the equation, as soon as you start thinking about it just in terms of dollars and cents or accomplishing a project without a real focus on the people, that's when you start losing. And so I think, you know, veterans oftentimes think in the reverse order. They're thinking very much about the people at all costs. And obviously, how do you get those people to accomplish a mission? And in my mind, that's the main distinction and would definitely focus more on leadership rather than management.
Yeah. It's often been said that in simple terms, leadership is doing the right things, whereas management is doing things right. What I have found is oftentimes, especially in the elite units in the military, a lot of confidence comes from competence. That in the military, you've done a whole bunch of roles that are now subordinate to you, so you know their jobs. In the civilian world, in the business world, oftentimes you're put in charge of people you have no idea how to do their jobs. And so your confidence has to come from somewhere different than your competence, because maybe you weren't an IT person or an HR person or something, but you're managing that function now. Has anybody encountered that?
Yeah, that's a really good point, Jan. I think, like, you know, you hit the nail on the head there. At Google, like, a big thing that we not only interview for and actually measure our employees on is thriving in ambiguity, right? It's the ability to handle complex projects that maybe not only have you not worked on before as an employee, but maybe no one has, right? And you kind of have to figure it out as you go, and you're going to take some lumps along the way and do it with a positive attitude and be curious. That is an adjustment for some military members who, you know, there is a 10-step process for loading this or for starting up some operation that is very strict to follow and very important. And sometimes there are opportunities for that, navigating ambiguity in the military, but just a little different at a place like Google where we actually look for it.
Yeah. I spoke to someone in an elite unit yesterday, and we were talking about, you know, some of the characteristics of you know, war fighters and, you know, meticulous planning, contingencies, all those things. And at the same time, you know, this person's observation was, sometimes coming out of the military, we're not as adaptable as we think we are. And as creative with our problem solving, because, you know, there's a structure and there's rules and there's guidelines in the military. I mean, these are the things that keep people safe. These are the things that work. And then in the business world, it seems we're always trying new things. We're always experimenting. We're always taking risks and being bold. Does that sound familiar? Is that, anyone encountered that in their transition? Alberto?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I think that, you know, as a submariner, as a nuclear submariner, we have checklists on top of checklists, and you're very, very, you're circle Xing each and every step in a process. And that's just not the way the real world works. That's definitely not the way that the private sector works.
Yeah.
And so I will say, like, I think it's important. One thing that my experience in the military at least taught me was in terms of managing risks. And I think that the business world does very much value that aspect, that it's not just complete ambiguity. It's how do you sort of triage and manage different risks. And I think, again, that's a strength that that military people bring to the private sector.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point. Especially about risk. I can't even imagine on a nuclear sub, the implications for not doing the Circle X. what about, I'm wondering what you all wish you had known, you know, 2 years ago about transition, that, gosh, you know, I got all kinds of guidance and input and advice, but the one thing that nobody told me about was what? What do you wish you'd known? Antonio? Okay.
Yeah, you know, I think if there was one thing I would have gone back and you know, redone, I would have looked more and aligned myself somewhere. I would have looked for an industry that aligned with my passions and my purpose more. Right. Mm. I think I was more focused, and I think this is relative to everyone's own personal transition. For me, it wasn't a long planned out thing. I just retired and I did it relatively quickly. So, you know, you got to balance that. Well, I need a job. I need to take care of my family, but I also, you know, I'm going to start looking in all these different industries, right? I think if you can slow down a minute and take a tactical pause and say, where do my interests and where do my passions lie the most? And then really target those industries. I think that's what I would have done.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Antonio, when we asked General Dempsey, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, you know, what his advice was, it was exactly that. You know, you joined the military because you were passionate about serving. And he said, you know, why not apply that same passion to something that you really care deeply about? Yeah. And it is easy to think, gosh, I've been busy. I don't want to not be busy. I'm just going to jump on the first opportunity that comes because I want to continue to take care of my family. Mm-hmm. But we all know, I mean, if we come home at night because we're good tired, you know, we're a better person for our family than if we come home bad tired.
Yeah.
So let me pop something up. Aaron Johns just put this up. When people have an entire career of legal experience, military intel, or other specific professions, or even project management, how do we smooth our transition to getting hired? Matt, you're the Google recruiter.
Yeah.
What do you say?
Yeah, that's an amazing question, Aaron, and it's one of the most common questions we see from transitioning vets. You know, I think that a lot of times, folks who have entire careers of legal, military intelligence, professions like that have incredible experience. It's just a lot of it is, you know, a little bit of marketing it the right way and, you know, explaining it the right way on a resume, understanding how to explain it maybe in networking and interviews, that type of thing. You know, one thing we do at Google is every so often we'll do resume sessions where we'll meet with veterans and try to like break it down and try to, you know, maybe change military lingo and try to make it a little bit more business friendly. So some examples, you know, maybe someone who has some of this experience has brigade on their resume, but, you know, a recruiter who doesn't have any sort of military exposure may not know what that means. So maybe you could change the word brigade to organization, or, you know, XO, executive officer, change to deputy manager or something like that. And there are a whole host of resources out there available for folks. We have some on our career website on the Google career site. I encourage you to check out. But I would say that tends to be a big challenge is basically breaking down this amazing experience you have and making it more digestible for someone in a civilian capacity.
You know, one of the things that we talked about out on the Crucible a lot when we're out in Moab about transitioning was being curious. And I think I would add to what you said, Matt, for Aaron's question is, I think sometimes we think, boy, we've got to really be in sell mode. We've got to convince people. We've got to really tell them how great we are and how these experiences translate. When in reality, I think what often is one of the most engaging things we can do from an interpersonal perspective is to ask questions, to be curious about the challenges, to really understand, you know, that job and the issues and the opportunities, and then provide input and help people understand how our skills and experience translate over, rather than jumping in right away with a whole bunch of assumptions. Any thoughts on that, Alberto?
Yeah, kind of a thought going back to your previous question, as well as that most recent one. One of the things that I wish that I had known more coming out of the military was the value of networking and being curious during that networking process. And I think, you know, I work with veterans and National Service alumni who are transitioning to politics. And I think there's this presumed like ugliness to networking, to being on LinkedIn, to joining groups and whatever else. But the truth is, it's a group of people who like wants to get to know you. And when you are genuinely curious about that field or the work that they're doing or the culture that their organization is trying to build, they want to have that conversation even more. And so a lot of what I do is convincing veterans to start joining some of those groups that they care about. And networking just isn't this transactional thing. It's about being curious and getting to know about other people who are doing things you're interested in. So I think it's just an incredibly valuable thing for people who are transitioning from one phase of life or one job, regardless of what it is, to another.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I mean, networking sounds like, the image always pops in my head is being in a big giant ballroom, walking around with a drink and trying to talk to people. And you're just thinking about how the heck do I get out of here as quickly as possible? I mean, we always think that's networking when, you know, so much of networking actually happens over LinkedIn these days, and warm introductions from people and follow up. And again, being curious about other people. So I you know, it'd be great if we just called networking being curious. let me pop up another one here. And this one might be for you, Antonio. Looks like it's from maybe a fellow Marine. Decision-making is a process in the Marine Corps. Rapid planning, deliberate planning are completely developed processes. How have you seen decision-making in the corporate world compared to military decision-making? Good question,
yeah,
Daniel.
I'll take that. Dan is a good friend and been a good mentor to me, actually. So thanks for joining, Dan. You know, you're right. The decision-making process in the military, from what I've seen compared to the corporate world, is significantly different, right? It is so structured and if not this, then this, and if not that, then this, right? Because you always have to have those contingencies in place. Whereas I don't see that so much in the corporate world. There is some to a degree, and it's always tied to revenue, right? Because the purpose of the business is the bottom line. So it's just a different way of doing it, I think, and it's more collaborative across the functions from what I've seen when it comes to decision making, always tied to how is it going to grow the business.
Yeah. And I'm putting in some notes that Matt, just a file that Matt put in. We're getting some other questions. Where is it? And this is, I think, going to be for you, Matt. There we go. Let me throw this one up there. What are the appropriate questions to ask in an interview?
Yeah, that's a broad one.
Yeah.
Sure. So, I mean, at the end of the day, the interview questions ideally are, you know, we're trying to dig a little bit deeper and see what we can't maybe see on just the resume from reading through it, right? That's the purpose of the interview. You know, it's going to vary depending on the role. Obviously, an engineering role is going to look very, very different than a sales position. But at their core, we want to see what you've accomplished, how you accomplished it, and how you measured it. Ultimately, that's what we want to see from a resume. That's what we want to see on interview questions. I can speak for Google. I know that, you know, in the past, people said that Google had all these crazy questions of how many golf balls can you fit in a 747, all those types of questions. We don't ask those types of questions anymore. We feel like they're really not that helpful, as you can imagine. So the questions should be more targeted to what you accomplished.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing to keep in mind, and again, you know, to Mohammed's question here, is, you know, the interview is a two-way street.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you want to know if you had a good interview, then you just answer this question: was it a conversation or an interrogation? Totally. And if it was a conversation, it probably went well. And to me, you know, going back to what Antonio said about being, you know, passion, purpose, is the questions you definitely should ask for your own self is, tell me about the characteristics of people that have been successful here. Tell me about the characteristics of the people who have not been successful, who have failed, because that's going to be your best indication of what the company or the organization truly values. And if they value what you value, that's an indicator that it might be a pretty good fit. If it doesn't line up, you're not going to be happy there in the long haul. And that's something to keep in mind, that the interview really goes two ways. And when we ask questions, when we ask good questions, it conveys confidence. And we all know that confidence is attractive. You know, we don't want to just come in there and sit there and just answer questions. So, let me ask something of each of you. What do you think are the biggest misperceptions, you know, that veterans are dealing with, whether you come from the Navy or the Army or the Air Force or the Marines or the Coast Guard? What do you think's the big misperceptions, Antonio?
Yeah, I think, and I experienced this myself, was that we're very rigid, we're very authoritarian, and kind of more robotic and less people-centric, when it's quite the contrary, right? Because we understand leadership so well, it's really the contrary. We understand people, and we know how to connect with people, and we know how to motivate them to get their work done. So I think that's the biggest misperception that the companies have, the companies that don't understand the value a veteran brings, right? When they understand the value you bring, they understand that you're the complete opposite of what I think most people think about us veterans.
Yeah. Any other comments from Alberto or Matt on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think Antonio hit the nail on the head. I think that there's this like interesting dynamic in terms of putting military people on a pedestal sometimes, where like obviously have earned a lot of that respect and whatever else, but at the same time, it can hamper interesting conversations, them truly trying to get to understand what your experience was like. A lot of the time, it kind of turns into this conversation where they just want to hear all about this military experience, but they don't necessarily get that you've had so much leadership and people experience. And so completely agree with Antonio, really refocusing the conversation to what that type of leadership looked like.
Yeah. Matt, anything you'd like to add?
Antonio and Alberto answered that really well. I don't have a whole lot to add. I would totally agree. I think that, you know, this doesn't speak for everyone, but some folks who don't have any exposure to friends in the military or family or anything like that, you know, might assume things about military members or service members that maybe they're all frontline soldiers, or they're all one thing, when it's, you know, a huge, huge Department of Defense with so many different jobs and leadership opportunities and management opportunities that people have. So just, it's always great to listen and learn.
Those
folks.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that every single person that served was in a gunfight. And there's a lot of people that were, but a lot of people weren't. But it doesn't negate or diminish the experience or the lessons that they learned about leadership. You know, because one of the things that I think you know, the military all has in common is, you know, there's a certain degree of sacrifice and a certain degree of we before me. As we all know from our experiences, the worst thing in the military is somebody that's selfish. They do not do well. And sometimes for us coming out of the military, that's a big shock when we see selfish behaviors. You know, again, I think it's incumbent on us, and it's basically our duty, you know, to bring out the best in people, to help create that we versus the me. Caitlin has a really good question here. Let me pop that up. Come on. StreamYard, work for me. The transition process is overwhelming. What are the biggest challenges you face getting out to where you are today? That's a big question. Caitlin, thank you for the ask. Who wants to tackle this one?
I'll hop on first. You know, first off, excellent question. I think one of the things that I've recognized in my current role is just that, like, everybody transitioning from the military, it is a challenge. It doesn't matter if you're a private or a seaman apprentice or an admiral or a general. It is tough. It is very overwhelming. There are so many resources out there, so many resources that are valuable, and a lot of resources that aren't as valuable as they might look. And so trying to navigate those waters alone can be really daunting. Everybody goes through this. And so, you know, your mentors who are in the military, other people as you're networking, whatever else, like, they will have valuable insight in how they navigated their own transition experience. And somebody's going to have that golden piece of wisdom that's going to help you think through your own process. I talked to a lot of people, and there's one person I spoke to who just gave me the process that clicked in my brain and worked to help me navigate through that whole sea of stuff that's out there.
Yeah, if I can share. So there's two things here, right? There's getting out and getting your job, and then there's transitioning, right? They are completely two separate lines of efforts there, and I want to make sure that that's clear. For me, I landed a job quickly, right? And that wasn't my challenge because I had networked prior, right? And I understand the importance of networking. For me, my challenge was the transition, right? Going from, you know, 20 plus years in the military to this new corporate world where I didn't speak the same language. I wasn't in the same call. I was completely out of my tribe and into a new tribe. And for me, my challenge was the transition, right? And that took me probably over a year and a half, I'd say, to I won't say fully transition, but to transition enough that I feel I am now part of this, you know, new tribe and this new culture in this company.
That's so well. You're the first person I've ever had really distinguish the two, Antonio. I think that's a brilliant perspective. You know, it is, you know, for me, when I went through it, I just remember thinking I'm going to control what I can control, and I'm going to prepare, and I'm going to have to, you know, throw myself into it just like I did in the military, you know, that I really had to learn. But, you know, even to this day, there's times when, and it's been a long time for me since I got out, there's still times when I think more like a soldier than I do a business person. So, you know, the Marines get to say once a Marine, always a Marine. I don't know if the rest of us get to say that, but hey, let me shift over to another one. And this is, let me just kind of go around the horn. This is a great question here. And this is from Frank Bernard, Bernhardt, sorry about that. If you had to answer briefly, would you say good leaders are made rather than born or made? I think I know what you guys are going to answer, but Matt, what do you think?
Made, no doubt in my mind.
Yeah. Antonio?
100% made.
Yeah. And Alberto?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely made.
Yeah. And I would say, Frank, I wouldn't be in the leadership development business if I thought I couldn't help people become better leaders. So, you know, we call our expedition the crucible because it's a metaphor for a severe test. And, you know, the whole idea is that you're not the same person coming out of something difficult as you are going into it. And, you know, all these experiences really forge our character and cause us to be better. And not because it was easy and we did everything right. It's because the crucible basically is a place where we're tested. You know, our weaknesses and our flaws are all on display, and we learn from that. And I think that's the part where really courage comes in. You know, it's not running in front of a hail of bullets. It's basically, you know, being willing to fail, to put yourself out there, to take yourself out of your comfort zone. And that's what I think this military transition is really about, is it's going to be uncomfortable. You're going to be out of your comfort zone. You're not going to be with your people that you've been with for 3, 4, or 4 years or 20 years. So anything you guys want to add to that? Alberto, you look like you're going to jump in.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really well said. So, you know, we are all in the military in the business of making and building leaders, and both for ourselves and for the teams that we lead. And so couldn't agree more with the way you put that.
Yeah. We got another one here. This is a great question coming from Ryan. Do you find that there was a skills gap that you experienced between, you know, the military time and the corporate world? And how'd you overcome that, if you felt there was one? Antonio, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, for sure. The biggest skill gap, I think, and I think I can relatively safely say this for the general military population, the biggest skill gap is understanding the financials. Right, unless that's your specific job in the military, and you know your financial, I don't even know what MOS that is. That is a huge gap that I realized coming into the corporate world, is understanding financials and how to tie it all together and what it all means. How did I overcome that? It goes back to being curious and having humility, knowing that, you know, I've got to ask somebody. And I don't care who it is, I'm going to ask. And no matter how it makes me look or how they perceive me to be this veteran who has, you know, 20 plus years of experience, hey, I don't know this. Someone help me. You know, I think that was the biggest thing for me.
Yeah. You know, one of the questions that I had for you guys was about purpose. And I put this poll out recently. You know, and I asked, whose responsibility is it for you to find purpose in your work? And we got 98 votes, and only 1%, one 1% of people, I guess that is 1%, basically said my employer is responsible for providing purpose. And I find this really interesting, because there's so much talk about how we leaders and organizations need to provide purpose for people. You know, that's what motivates people. And overwhelmingly, people said, you know, hey, that purpose has to come from within. I need to find my purpose. I mean, the organization has something, but, you know, it's a vessel by which I get to exercise, you know, my passion, my purpose. And, you know, so my question is, have you all found a purpose, you know, now that you've transitioned, that's as rewarding as what you found in the military? Matt?
Thanks, Jen. Yeah, and I think I responded to that question, option C, the employer and myself, the individual. And I believe that for sure. Absolutely. I think, you know, my purpose in my role, it's to hire great people for entry-level roles, right? It's people who maybe they're a first-generation college student or transitioning military veteran, right? Those types of hires, you know, when someone, you can really tell it's impactful when you give them that offer, is it's hard to describe that feeling, you know, without getting too emotional. It's pretty special. So that's the best part of the job. And I always tell candidates, if I do get the opportunity to extend them an offer, I always say, hey, this is the best part of my job too. I know you're happy, but this is great for me too. So that certainly brings me purpose on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, good. Appreciate that, Matt. And appreciate your insight on choosing both. Alberto, what do you say?
Yeah. So I also chose both employer and yourself. I don't know, you know, I had to go back to the previous question. I had no experience in politics. I've never run a campaign, been on a campaign, done any of this before. And it's not any different than your time in the military. Every 2 or 3 years, you get orders to some new responsibility, some new job that you have to figure out and how to be successful in that role. The work that I'm doing now is incredibly fulfilling. But I do think the part of the question that feels very much like it is my responsibility to find purpose is if I'm sweeping floors or driving a taxi or doing the work I'm doing now, I do think that there is this important piece that each of us individually has in figuring out why it's important work to us and what value we're bringing, how we're doing the best at that job that we can. So yes, I think the employer, the culture, all of those things matter, but it is really important for you to do that work too, to find value in what you're doing.
Yeah. Go ahead, Antonio.
You know, Jan, for me, I had to do a self-assessment when it came to purpose, right? Again, it goes back to when I actually transitioned, right? You know, a year and a half later, I mean, I considered leaving my company in this great company that I'm with because I didn't understand it, have my purpose, right? I had to take a pause and say, okay, what am I doing and where am I making an impact on the world, right? And I had to zoom out and take a look truly at what I did and how it made a difference, right? And that's where I tied in my purpose into my, you know, position in the company. And I made the connecting file there. And then I realized, man, I'm in a really good place, right? But I also answered the question there is I have my purpose outside of work because, you know, veterans, we are naturally wired to serve, right? Naturally wired to make a difference in other people's lives or wherever we choose to make a difference. And that's where I really find that my passion is I find it outside of work, you know, volunteering with the Travis Manning Foundation and giving back to the community, giving back and being a mentor to children that need it or underprivileged kids and doing whatever I can in the community to make my community a better place, make the United States a better place. So I think it can go both ways, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Good. I've got two more questions. Before I do, I want to answer Aaron. Aaron made a comment in here. Let me post it up here so I can not only read it, but show it. You know, when you have a bad team leader in the private sector, your motivation wanes. And Aaron, I couldn't agree more. And I would say when you have a bad leader in the military, your motivation wanes. But I can tell you this, you know, you can learn in some cases more from bad leaders than you can from good leaders. So and as I reflect back on the bad leaders, you know, what I look back and I say, well, yeah, they weren't the most effective leaders, but oftentimes I look in the mirror and my criticism is that I didn't handle them as well as I could have, that I could have dealt with them differently and produced a different outcome. I could have demonstrated more leadership with them that would have helped them be more effective. But I you know, pride and ego got in the way, impatience got in the way, a lot of those things. So I would just throw that out there as a something to think about. Let me ask you guys just a couple more questions. Based on the Crucible, you were around executives and peers, fellow veterans transitioning. What was your number one takeaway from the Crucible that you might say, hey, this is a great tip for transitioning veterans? What might that be? Just chime in if you...
Yeah, I think mine goes back to what you said earlier about being curious. I think there's this like implied belief that military people hold all the answers to leadership and you've led in these stressful situations and thus you know what leadership looks like. And business executives absolutely are dealing with what I think are, you know, similar to life and death decisions every day and hiring and firing and everything else. And so just being curious and listening to the stories of those business executives was such an incredible opportunity, hearing their stories and
learning their, you know, the leadership that they have gained in the private sector, it's not that different. And it was just really great hearing those stories.
Yeah. Thanks, Alberto. Matt?
Go ahead, Matt.
Sure. You know, I think I mentioned this the last day of the Crucible, just like a reminder of the power of a diverse team. You know, I think that's such a common thing we hear now that I almost feel like we don't actually break it down and actually see it as much on a day-to-day basis. But it was a great reminder of just such special things can happen when you have different people that bring different skill sets in challenging situations. You know, for all of us, myself included, I've been working from home now for 16 months running, hoping to go back to the office next month. As much as we have these virtual meetings at work, it's not the same. I think everyone knows that. So it's a great reminder of just like, okay, this is what this is like when we all get together and work together to achieve things.
Yeah.
For me, I think a big takeaway was, and I remember having this conversation with one of the business executives that was there, and Matt, you might have been in the small circle. He said, and I quote, "I need people who can lead people, and that's what you guys bring," right? And that really stuck out to me because he understood the value a veteran brings. And when you can get in front of people that understand the value you bring, you know, that's what they're looking for. That's what they need. He said, "I can teach you the skills to do the job. That's the easy part. It's finding people who can lead people to get things done," right? That was a huge takeaway for me. And you know, the challenge is being able to translate that value to the employer that's across the table that you're interviewing with, right? And that's always the challenge.
Yeah. We've got another comment and then a last question. And this is from Erica, and I'll take this one. You know, Erica's saying, you know, "I don't want to sell anything, and I'm not interested in health, but I want to help people and connect with them in a way. What might be recommended?" And Erica, you know, what I would say is I find people all think, you know, I need to figure out the industry and my role in the company. And where I would go is, you know, who are your people? I mean, who are the people that you want to help? For me, it's executives and senior executives and veterans. That's the people I want to help. And so I apply what I've learned over the years to those people that are, you know, I most want to help and feel I can help. So I think it's, you know, don't stray too far from your interests of the type of people you want to help. And it kind of goes back to really examining what you value. And then I think you'll find it. And, you know, and I'm kind of reminded of this great venture capitalist in Ireland that was always fond of saying, sell the problem, not the solution. Well, I think oftentimes coming out of the military, we're so solution oriented, you know, we're like a hammer looking for a bunch of nails instead of saying, you know, what are the problems? Do I really understand the problems, the issues out there before I just go and say, I've got the solution? Because oftentimes figuring out the root cause will lead us in a whole number of areas that's unexpected. And speaking of that, and thanks again, Erica, for the great question. But speaking of unexpected area, the last thing I wanted to ask of each of you is, you know, so what's next? You know, I say that the people that go out on crucibles have to have heroic aspirations beyond power and money to make the world a better place. So what's next down the road for your heroic aspirations, Matt?
Thanks, Jan. That's a great question. For the role that I do day to day, it's primarily been focusing on hiring in the US and Canada. I'm trying to grow that out and potentially try to hire more in Mexico City. It's an office that we're really trying to grow. That would be a lot of responsibility for me and challenging, but also really exciting. That's civilian service in the reserves. You know, my military experience, I don't have, you know, as many years experience as Alberto and Antonio. So maybe in the reserves, if I could go along with the deployment or mobilization or something like that, is another aspiration of mine.
Good. Thanks, Matt. Really appreciate you. Alberto, what say you?
Yeah, I had mentioned this at the beginning. I was working in foreign policy before my current role, and I love foreign policy. I want to find a way to get back to it, but I was personally frustrated sort of with America's place in the world. And my goal in this new role and in working with veterans and National Service alumni in politics is to revitalize democracy. I think American democracy needs real leaders who are interested in serving their people. And so very much want to tackle that problem, want to find good human beings to be engaged in our democracy and in whatever way that looks, not just running for office. So feel very committed to that job right now. And it's a big job to be done.
Yep. Excellent. Thanks, Alberto. And Antonio, what about you?
Yeah, so I'm going to go complete opposite spectrum here. My goals and aspirations is to, in 7 years, be fully retired and hit the road, living a full-time RV life with my wife, seeing all that America has to offer. So I cannot wait.
Yeah. I'm gonna put a bet right now that it won't last more than 6 months before you're chomping at the bit to get
no
busy.
Timeline on it, Jen. It's just however long we do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you worked hard and you sacrificed a lot over the years, and your family did as well. So, part of the reason we work is to be able to enjoy. Enjoy things. And I think, that's a big question that we're all facing these days. How does this all come together? Work and life and all these different things. And it really does go back to, really understanding two fundamental things. What do I want and what do I value? And I really think that we serve ourselves best when we have that self-awareness and that reflection. And one of the things about the Crucible that hopefully you all experienced was it was a moment in time where we could literally step back away from these things and have some quiet time just for reflection and solitude and figure out those two things. What do we want and what do we value? And when we've got our values prioritized, then it makes those big life decisions a heck of a lot easier. We don't struggle with them. But again, I want to thank the four of you for not only being outstanding participants on our last Crucible, but the fact that you're continuing to pay it forward to the vets. And Matt and Alberto, again, thank you not only for your past service, but your continued service to our country. Whether you're in politics or recruiting at Google or working at an oil and gas and services company, a lot of what we're trying to do is build America and create a better life for future generations. So again, thank you all. And for those of you that have been listening in, we thank you for listening in. And if you found value in this, we hope that you share this. This will be posted on Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. And if we can be of a resource to any of you, please reach out to us on LinkedIn, and we'd be glad to connect with you. Again, Jan Rutherford from Self-Reliant Leadership signing off. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Jan. Thanks, Alberto. Thanks, Antonio.